Tamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Chapter entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, Text Number 30. Atavishat Swabhavanam Savakamam Manutamam Prasada Yatra Patninam Sahasrani cha shodasha Atavishat swabhavanam Savakaman anutamam Prasada yatra patninam Sahasrani cha shodasha Atavishat swabhavanam Savakamam anutamam Prasada yatra patninam Sahasrani cha shodasha Ata, thereafter, Avishat, entered, Swabhavanam, personal palaces, Sava, all, Kamam, desires, Anuttamam, perfect to the fullest extent. Prasada, palaces, yatra, where, patninam, of the wives numbering, sahasrani, thousands, cha, over and above, shodasha, Sixteen. Translation and Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter the Lord entered His palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. Translation responsibly. Thereafter the Lord entered His palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. Purport. Lord Krishna had 16,108 wives, and for each and every one of them there was a fully equipped palace, complete with necessary compounds and gardens. Full description of these palaces is given in the 10th canto. All the palaces were made of the best marble stone. They were illuminated by jewels and decorated by curtains and carpets of velvet and silk, nicely bedecked and embroidered with gold lace. The personality of Godhead means one who is full with all power, all energy, all opulences, all beauties, all knowledge and all renunciation. Therefore, in the palaces of the Lord, there was nothing wanting for fulfilling His desires. There was nothing wanting for fulfilling all desires of the Lord. The Lord is unlimited, and therefore His desires are also unlimited. And the supply is also unlimited. Everything being unlimited, it is concisely described here as Sada Kamam. All full with all desirable equipment. Amagyan, timiram dasya, ginanjana, shalakaya, chakshurun militam yena tasmai, shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpat Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Ram Rama Hare Hare. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is unique. And the Bhagavad philosophy is unique because it gives a description of the kingdom of God. This is not found anywhere else. The other Vedic, the other literatures of the world, the other religious scriptures, the other philosophies, the other theologies, they don't describe in detail what it's like in God's kingdom. For example, in the Bible, they say there is a God. And Prabhupada said, the Bible says God is great, but the Bhagavatam describes how God is great. Actually, Prabhupada said the Gita, the Bhagavad Gita, describes how God is great. But then the Bhagavatam is a elaboration of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita doesn't have any pastimes in it. It doesn't have any descriptions in it. Any story in it. It's just philosophy. It's Upanishad. That's why it's called Gita Upanishad. It's just philosophy. It's Upanishadic portion of the Vedas. It's just the philosophical part of the Vedas. So, in order to elaborate upon the Bhagavad Gita, then the Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken. And everything which is in the Gita is expanded upon in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And where the Bhagavad Gita finishes is where the Srimad Bhagavatam begins. How does the Bhagavad Gita finish? Surrender unto Krishna. So just before it says surrender to Krishna, it says Sava Dhamman Parijaja. Sava Dhamman, Sava Dharma, right? Abandon all other religion except for Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Except for surrendering to Krishna. You have to abandon everything else. And then, where does the Bhagavatam begin? In the beginning, the first three verses of the Bhagavatam, it says it rejects Kaitava Dharma. Kaitava Dharma means cheating religion. So the Bhagavad Gita finishes by saying, we reject everything except surrender to Krishna. And the Bhagavatam begins by saying, we reject everything except surrender to Krishna. So where the Bhagavad Gita finishes, the Bhagavatam begins, and then the Bhagavatam elaborates on the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. And it gives you practical examples of how to understand that philosophy. As Prabhupada said, the Gita describes how God is great. And the Bhagavatam elaborates upon the Gita. The Gita says, God is great. Aham savasya prabhu mataha savam pravatate. These statements are there in the Gita. Krishna makes very powerful statements in Bhagavad Gita. Aham, what does aham mean? I. Aham Savasya. What does Sava mean? Everything. All. Sava. Prabhavo. Mataha Savam Pravatate. So Krishna says Sava. When Krishna says Sava, he means everything. Right? Sometimes we say someone comes to your house and they say, is this your house? And you say, yes, it is all mine. Right? So, okay, that little house is yours. Right. And actually, that little house isn't even yours. Right. When you die, you don't have it. You don't take it with you when you're dead. So it's not actually yours. But you may say, okay, that's mine. But you don't own this city. Right? You don't own this planet. And you don't own this universe. And you don't own all the universes. Right? And the material world is only one quarter of God's creation. Most of God's creation is spiritual. So you don't own everything, but when Krishna says, aham sarvasya prabhu, when he says, I own everything, he means everything. Right? Every single atom belongs to who? Oh, very good. Yeah. Every single atom belongs to
Krishna.
Bhagavan. He owns everything. So when Krishna says that, that is God speaking. Aham sarvasya prabhu. This is God, only God can speak like this. Krishna speaks very boldly in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, I am the source of everything. But that's the definition of God. Everything comes from him. He is the source of everything. He is all powerful. So the Bhagavatam gives you descriptions of this person. How God is great, it describes. He says, I own everything. I am the source of everything. I am the source of unlimited power. Right? And now the Bhagavatam is describing, okay, so what does that mean? So one time in the 1980s, my spiritual master, there's a famous Back to Godhead article where he had a meeting with the cardinal of the Catholic Church in the Philippines. What was his name?
Cardinal Sim.
Yes, Cardinal Sim. Very strange name for a cardinal. Cardinal means the cardinals are below the Pope. The Pope is the head of the Catholic Church. And the cardinals are one below. So he was the cardinal for the whole of the Philippines. He was the top person in the Philippines in the Catholic Church. Cardinal Sin. So he had a meeting with Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said to him, he said, what does God do in the kingdom of God? And Cardinal Sin, he thought about it. He said, God sits upon a throne. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, does he ever get off the throne? And Cardinal Sin, he thought about it. And he said, we do not know. So they don't know. No one else knows. It is not described anywhere else in any other religious scripture, in any other philosophy, what God does. It doesn't describe it. There is no description. He owns everything. But then what does he do with everything? Does he just sit on the throne? Now, I own everything now. Okay? And he just sits there forever. And he just looks around and he says, this is all mine. Right? And then once in a while someone comes in from earth, right? You die and you go to heaven, and then you get to the gate, Prahlad Nandaswami, who is very funny. He's very humorous sannyasi. He gives very funny descriptions about this, like that. So I'll repeat the description for your pleasure. Prahlad Nandaswami says, so then God's sitting there on his throne, and someone comes to heaven, comes to the pearly gates, and St. Peter is there, and he says, what is your name? And you say, my name is such and such. And he says, oh yeah, you're here. Okay, so come in. So you come in before God, and God's sitting there, and God says, have you been good? And you say, yes, my Lord. Do you believe in Jesus? And you say, yes, my Lord. And he says, very good. And he gives you a harp, and then he says, that's cloud 9. So you go and sit on that cloud. So you sit up on the cloud and you go. And God sits there, and about once every, you know, say 6 days, he looks at you and he goes. Right. So that's what God does. Right? That's God. Does he ever get off the throne? Huh? Cardinal Sin says, I don't know. That's what God does. That's all he does. He sits on the throne, right? And, you know, once every 7 minutes, an angel puts a grape in his mouth. Right? He turns it. Right? And there's people behind him with peacock fans going. Like that. And that's God. And that's what he does. He just sits there on a throne, right? So it doesn't describe anywhere. There's no description. Right? You read in the Bible, there's no description. You read in the Quran, there's no description. You read in the Torah, there's no description. You read in the Lotus Sutra of the Buddhists, right? That everything's nothing anyway. Right? So that doesn't explain anything. And then here, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the source of everything. And now he says, okay, this is what it is like. Right? What do I do? Now that I have everything, what do I do with it? Okay, so now you enter into the spiritual world. Now you understand. So Prabhupada says these pictures, these paintings, he said these are windows into the spiritual world. Right? You're actually looking into the spirit. His Prabhupada said these are windows. You're actually looking directly in right now. What's going on there? Okay, he's sitting on a throne. Very good. Right? That's what he does. He sits on a throne. But who is he sitting there with? Right? In that picture, he's sitting there with Srimati Radharani, so that's accurate. Right? Does he ever get off the throne? Yes, he does. And what does he do when he gets off? Look over there. He dances. Right? Or he goes with the cows through the pastures like that. Like that. And then his expansion, Balaram, also dances. Right? And sometimes he becomes intoxicated. And he says, see, our philosophy is no intoxication. Right? And then what happens when you get back to the spiritual world? Krishna says, now you can take intoxication. Right, but it's different up there. Now, what's the intoxication called? Yeah, but then what do they drink? It's called Varuni. Have you ever had it? You can only have it once a year. And that day has already passed. Like that. And it's called Baladev Purnim. And you can drink Varuni beverage like that. So you drink that Varuni, and then what happens? You become intoxicated. So everyone in the spiritual world is drinking Varuni. They're all intoxicated. It describes that Krishna, and you can sit on that side. Matiji?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sit on. That's okay. Just sit on that side. So it describes that everyone in the spiritual world, they drink this Varuni, they become intoxicated. Srimati Radharani drinks this drink, Varuni, and then she says to Krishna, now let us dance. She drinks Varuni, and then she says, now let us dance. Krishna's also drinking it, he dances. Balaram, he drinks a lot of it. Balaram drinks a lot of it. There's some pastimes where Balaram arrives at a particular place, and then he's there, and then everyone's speaking, and then Balaram says, where's the Varuni? That's what he's concentrating on. He said, where is the Varuni? Do you have Varuni? Well, where is the Varuni? So everyone is taking that intoxication like that. So it describes in the spiritual world what it's actually like in the spiritual world. So here we hear about the Aishwarya of Krishna. It describes that, as we said last week, there is Vrindavan, there is Mathura, and there is Dwarka. So now we're hearing about Dwarka. So Dwarka is Aishwarya Dham. What does Aishwarya mean? Opulence. Aishwarya, opulence. And what does Madhurya mean? Sweetness. So in Dwarka, which is where Krishna lives when he's married, right? Aishwarya is predominant. Madhurya is there, but it is overshadowed by Aishwarya. And then in Vrindavan, the Aishwarya is there. Actually, Vrindavan is more opulent than Dwarka, but the opulence, the Aishwarya, is overshadowed by Madhurya, sweetness. So in Vrindavan, everything is very sweet. Completely overshadows the Aishwarya. Whereas in Dwarka, the Aishwarya becomes overshadowed, the Madhurya becomes overshadowed by the Aishwarya, by God's opulence. So here you're hearing about God's opulence. This is what he does. What does he do when he gets off the throne? What does he do in the spiritual world? Right? It describes he has 16,108 wives, of which 8 are principal. Who are the 8 principal wives? Rukmini, Satyabhama, Jambavati, Kalindi, Mitravinda, 3 more. Maitra, is it? Maitra. I can't remember actually the 8 queens. I have to memorize them like that. So there are 8 principal queens and 16,108 other queens. Just to show his opulence, as I said last week, each palace is 4 square miles in diameter. Right? Each palace is 4 square miles. That's like from here to St Kilda. That's the palace. That's just his house. Yeah, that's not outside. That's not his front lawn. That's just the palace from here to St Kilda, and then from here to past MSAC, probably up to St Kilda Road, probably. I don't know how far. It's like his palace is like, it's massive, right? 16,108 of these palaces in Dwarka. As we described last week, all of that's just in 96 square miles. Dwarka's only 96 square miles in diameter, and he fits all of that within. Right? It doesn't feel like it's crowded in there. It's completely spacious like that. But that's his power. It's a chincha shakti. As Prabhupada says here, he can do whatever he wants. Sarva kamam. Kam means desire. Right? But can you fulfill your desires? No. Just like you want to get married. So many people want to get married, but they can't find anyone to marry. So you can't fulfill your desire. And then when you get married, you just want to be happy. And you can't. So you can't fulfill your desire. And then when you're married, you want to be a brahmachari or a brahmacharini again, and you can't. So you can't fulfill your desire. So we can't fulfill any desire, right? Don't blink for 1 minute. No one blink for 1 minute. You can't do it. You've got no control. You can't stop certain things. You can't fulfill your desires. Like that. Whereas Krishna is Sarva Kaman. Any desire he has, automatically, it is fulfilled. Right? 16,108 wives and 16,108 palaces. So each day, in the morning, it describes in the 10th canto, what does Krishna do when he gets up in the morning? In Dwarka. When does he get up? Yeah, when the roosters make their noise. Right? When he hears the roosters making their noise in the morning, then Krishna gets up. Like that. Oh, time to get up. Beginning of the Brahma Muhurta. That's when the birds start to sing. If you live at New Nandagram, then you hear in the morning when Brahma Muhurta begins, just when daylight just comes, that's when the birds begin to sing. And then you know, okay, now it's time to get up. Like that. So, Krishna, he hears the roosters crying, so then he gets up. And then what does he do? He takes bath. And then what does he do? Huh? Meditate. He meditates. Right? He teaches us what to do. Meditation. What do we do in the morning after we get up and take bath? Yeah, after Mangaladi then. Japa. Japa is? It's meditation. It's actually the original form of meditation. Right? You meditate on the holy name of Krishna. You're meditating, as we've described in previous classes. Prabhupada says when you become advanced in your chanting, you actually begin to meditate on the pastimes of Krishna. Right? When you're chanting your japa, then Krishna's pastimes come into your consciousness. Right? And you're meditating on them. It's the supreme form of meditation. Just like I was at the farm yesterday, and some life members came and stayed, and then they got up in the morning, and they said to me, "This is such a nice place for meditation." And I said, "What does that mean?" And they said, "Meditation, you know." And I said, "Yeah, but what are you meditating on?" Right? Devotees also go like this. Yeah. But what are they meditating on? Varuna juice. Meditating on? Krishna. That's what they're meditating on. Right? So meditation means not that the mind is vacant, right? That's not what meditation... People think these days the goal of meditation is nothing in the mind. If there's nothing in the mind, then you've reached samadhi. That's perfection. The mind cannot have nothing in it. That's not possible. The mind must have something in it. Not possible to clear the mind. The mind cannot accept negative injunctions. Right? You can't negate the mind. Just like you say to the mind, "Don't think of this." What does the mind do? Right? So if you say to the mind, "No thoughts," what does it do? So many things I think. Just like I say to you, "Don't think of a watermelon." Right? Did anyone not think? Not possible. Right? You can't not think it. Mind cannot accept negative injunctions. That's why you can't say to the mind, okay, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. What happens when you start saying that to your mind? As soon as you start saying to your mind, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, I'm not going to do that, your mind just... right? It rebels. So you have to give the mind positive injunctions, positive things. Right? If the mind is giving you trouble, you have to give it positive things. Right? You say, no, no, we're going to do this. We're going to do this because this is nectarian. Right? Sometimes if the mind is giving you problems, then you just say to your mind, mind, just be patient. Right? Just wait. Right? It's only another 320 days until we can have Varuni juice again. That's what I say to my mind every day. I count the days. Right? I just say to my mind, only another 320 days, just relax. Right? It is coming. And then you'll be happy again. Like that. So you have to control your mind by giving it positive things. Right? In Krishna consciousness. Right? You say to your mind, okay, now it's difficult. Now, like I was speaking to Bharujan Prabhu yesterday, and I was saying, you know, I was doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm saying it's hard work. And he said, all service is hard work. He said, there's no service that's easy. You don't get an easy service. Now, even if you get an easy service, it will turn into hard service pretty soon. Especially if you're in this temple. There's no such thing as easy service. Right? If it's easy, it'll become hard very shortly, like that. So, if your mind is saying, oh, this is so hard, this is so hard, then you just have to give it positive things to look forward to. Right? So what's the next positive thing to look forward to?
Radhashtami.
Radhashtami. Right? So sometimes we feel like the mind says, okay, this is so difficult, this is so difficult. So you say, it's okay, it's only a couple of weeks and then Radhashtami is there. So what's the problem? Right? Or, what have we got to look forward to this week? Yeah, that's nectarian. Right? And then on Saturday, there's a nice wedding. Right? And then we can all laugh at the couple. You know, there's one part of the wedding, you know, the husband puts their hand on the heart of the wife and he says, from love to love. I do that to Veda Priya all the time. I say, from love to love. But it's interesting, if you read the Sanskrit, what does the Sanskrit say? Right? It says calm. Calm doesn't mean love. Very, very interesting. Because if you... there's one time, Prabhupada was having a conversation with one of his early servants. Who are the two devotees? Pali Madan, Upendra Prabhu. Upendra Prabhu was the one who started the preaching here in Melbourne, like that. So he was Prabhupada's personal servant. So Upendra Prabhu was with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was doing something. They were in the room together. And Prabhupada was doing something. And Prabhupada was so transcendental. It's just like his consciousness was just transcendental. And Upendra Prabhu was saying something about marriage. He's saying, Prabhupada, I think I need to get married. And Prabhupada was doing something in the room, so he was half listening. You know, because, you know, Prabhupada was beyond this world. And Prabhupada said, what is that? And then Upendra said, Prabhupada, I need to get married. And Prabhupada said, so? Get married? Like that. And then Upendra Prabhu said, well, I have to find a wife. And then Prabhupada, they're in just New York or somewhere. And Prabhupada looked out the window and he said, there are so many women. He just looked out the window and said, there are so many women. He said, get married. Like that. And then Upendra Prabhu said, Prabhupada, they're not devotees. Like that. And he said, Prabhupada, what about love? And Prabhupada looked at him and said, love? He said, love? He said, love is for Krishna. This is not love. Although there is love there between the devotees, between the husband and wife. There is love there. It's not completely dry. But it's not the real. It's not the original love. It's not the love that satisfies the soul. Right. Unless the devotees are very advanced. Mother Jagatarini and Bhurajan have told me in Veda Priya over the years. They said, I think like for the first 10 years, right, they tried to change each other. I can't remember the order. It was quite funny. First 10 years, they tried to change each other. Second 10 years, they didn't like each other. Third 10 years, like 30 years of marriage, right? And said, like, you know, after the next 10 years, then you get to like each other. And they said, not only now, like after 40 years of marriage, they said, now we feel like we're friends. You know, because they see each other as servants of Krishna. That's actually what it's about. So, we have to have something to look forward to in the mind. Right? The mind has to have something to look forward to in order to stay enthused in Krishna consciousness. So I'm looking forward to the wedding. I will give Deepak. Deepak get initiated? Is it still Deepak? Or? Deepak, yeah. Deepak, I'll give him some glances during the wedding. When he looks over to me, I'll just say, throw your banana. It's all finished now. No return. And Krishna Kelly, I'll look at her also to give her some. So you have to have things to look forward to. Then Radhashtami comes, very nectarian. Kartik is coming very soon. Right, so many things to look forward to. So the mind needs positive things to look forward to. So Krishna, in the morning, he wakes up in Dwarka, and then what does he do? Right? He meditates. Right? But what does he meditate on? Meditates on Vrindavan. When Krishna is in Dwarka, then he is thinking of Vrindavan. This is described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Right? Then Rukmini, he gets up one morning, Krishna gets up, and then Rukmini, before Krishna enters the room, they're having a discussion, and Rukmini says, they're all discussing about Krishna, and she says, in the middle of the night, he's lying next to me, he's sleeping next to me, but in the middle of the night, he starts saying, O Radhe, O Vishakhe, O Lalite, middle of the night, even though he's lying next to his wife, but he's thinking of the gopis. And Satyabhama says to Rukmini, he says, you don't know anything. Satyabhama is very fiery. She says, you don't know anything. He doesn't even do that in the middle of the night. He does that when he's with me in the middle of the day. He's sitting next to me in the middle of the day and he starts looking off and he goes into a daydream and he goes, hey Rad, hey. Hey Vishak, hey. Hey Lalite. And then he realizes where he is again, like that. So he's always thinking of Vrindavan. He's always thinking of... So Krishna and Dwarka, he gets up in the morning and then he meditates. And then, after he meditates, then what does he do? He has breakfast. And then what does he do? What do we do after breakfast? What did you say? Very good, yeah. He goes to work. So what does he do? What's his work? Right? He's the prince of Dwarka. Right? He runs a city. He runs a state. So he gets on the chariot. 16,108 Krishnas walk out of 16,108 palaces and they get on 16,108 chariots. And then those 16,108 chariots, they start to go towards this Sudama assembly house. And then as they all get closer, they all begin to merge. And then by the time they get to the palace, they all merge and there's only one. And then they stop at the Sudama assembly hall. Krishna gets off and he walks in and he takes his seat with all of the Yadavas, all the members of the Yadu dynasty. And then they begin the day's work because they're Kshatriyas. So they have to talk about the kingdom. So then what do they do? What's the first thing that happens before the day begins? Entertainment, very good. To put everyone in a good mood, the court jesters come out and they make jokes. They come out and they do dramas and they do some dances and they make some jokes. And sometimes actors come, they dress as Krishna and they do dramas of when Krishna was in Vrindavan. Like that. And all this, it puts everyone in a very good mood. Before you start your management meetings, you have to have some jokes, you have to have some, you know. We have to make everyone's mood good. That's one of the services we have to do for the devotees. We have to make everyone's mood good. Right? Make everyone happy. Then we discuss the serious stuff. So Krishna and all the Yadavas, they make everyone's mood is good. Now let's talk about the state. Right? Who is attacking us? Right? Are we getting the taxes? Right? Is there enough food for everyone in the kingdom? Right? Then they discuss all the serious stuff. Then at the end of the day, Krishna walks out of the Sudama assembly hall. He gets on the chariot, drives off, and then that one Krishna starts to divide gradually into 16,108. And then he arrives in front of each of his palaces and he walks in. And what happens when he walks in?
His wives greet him.
His wives greet him. And what do they say? Yeah. Most of his wives speak very sweetly. My dear husband, you have come home. You must be tired after the day, as all wives do when their husbands come home. Right? You must be tired after the day. Please sit down. Let me bathe your feet. Are you listening to all of this? Right. Let me bathe your feet. Let me massage your feet. What would you like for dinner? This is what the wives say to the husbands when they come home. Right? So this is what the wives say to Krishna when he comes home. Except for Satyabhama. She's very contrary. She's called left wing, like that. She's not submissive to Krishna. She says, "Where have you been?
Where are you going to be?
Why are you a legend? You don't love me. Why are you not here on time?" So she says like that. So you have to be very careful who you marry. If you marry the right wing, you'll get one life. And if you marry the left wing, you get a different life. You have to be very careful who you choose. Some people are left wing, some are right. Some are submissive, some are contrary or domineering. Like that. So Krishna, he actually prefers the domineering. Why? Because there's more rasa. There's more pleasure. Krishna actually prefers Radharani's camp, who are unsubmissive, to Chandravali's camp, who are very submissive. So Krishna actually prefers that. And we were reading last night in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhakti Vaibhav class, we were reading that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the devotees, when they're very intimate with each other, they like to make jokes together. When devotees become very close friends, they always make jokes with each other. Even I was explaining to the devotees, I have one good friend, Tridish Prabhu. We were brahmacharis together, and I went and stayed with him at Mawalambar for a couple of weeks, a few weeks back. And another devotee, she's living upstairs in his house. She's kind of, renting up there, like he has like a top floor. So we're downstairs in the kitchen, and we're old friends. We travelled to Africa together, we sold paintings together, we did so many adventures together. We had lots of fun together. And then when we're together in the kitchen, then we're speaking to each other, but we're speaking in such a way, because we're good friends. She was upstairs, she thought we're having an argument. Because he was saying this, and I'm saying, and I'm saying that back to him, and like that. So she came out, and she said, "Is everything all right?" Right, and we just started laughing. Because friends do this. When you're very close with someone, then you're always, making some fun. So Krishna actually prefers this. He actually prefers Radharani's camp to Chandravali's camp because there's more fun. Right? There's more rasa. Because they're always trying to defeat each other. Like that. So Krishna, it describes here what he does when he gets off the throne. You won't find this in any other religion. You won't find all this description. You don't find, like in the Bible or the Quran, it doesn't say how many wives God has. Right? It doesn't say what he does. It doesn't say what the foods he likes to eat are. It doesn't say all these things are not described. Only in the Bhagavatam you'll find all of this information about Krishna. What he likes, what he does not like. All of these things are described elaborately. So, we are the most fortunate people because we get to hear the Bhagavatam every day. We get to meditate on God every day. It describes in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj describes there are nine processes of bhakti. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasham, Sakyam, Atman Nivedanam. Now, of the nine, Prabhupada says, which is the most important? Yeah, the first three are the most important. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. They're the most important out of all of them. So, Shravanam and Kirtanam are interdependent. Right? Kirtan means chanting. What do we do pretty much up until Bhagavatam class this morning? The morning program, it's basically it's chanting, right? It's kirtan. You're supposed to be listening to your rounds attentively. Chanting properly. Sometimes I see devotees chanting out here in the courtyard. They're not chanting very good rounds. Very distracted. Right? When you're chanting, you should be meditating. It's meditation. You should be meditating on the sound of the holy name of Krishna. Now, you should not be distracted. Even sometimes I see devotees reading, you know, like the notice board and that while they're chanting. Like that. And I go up to them and I say, Prabhu, what are you doing? And they say, oh, I'm chanting my rounds. I say, no, you're not. Right? This is not kirtan, this is shravanam. You're reading at the moment, you're hearing, you're not chanting. Now, you're not attentive. Now, you can't get the prima donna, you can't get the love for Krishna, the goal of the chanting, if you don't chant attentively. So we chant, why do we chant? To put ourselves in a purified state of mind. So that then when we hear the Bhagavatam, we get realizations. If you don't chant properly, you won't get realizations when you read the Bhagavatam or when you hear the Bhagavatam. So you have to chant nicely and then your realizations will come. And similarly, when you read the Bhagavatam, you do Shravanam, you hear the Bhagavatam, then when you chant, right, there is so much there that will enrich your chanting. As we said, Prabhupada said that you automatically should think of the pastimes of Krishna. Just like today, you've heard about Dwarka, you've heard about so many details about Krishna, about Dwarka. So now when you chant, these things can come into your mind. And gradually, one day you'll wake up and you'll be in the spiritual world. Hands up if you'd like to do that. Want to go to the spiritual world? You can only get there by desire. Calm. Calm means desire. If you have desire, then you can go to the spiritual world. If you don't have any desire, you will stay here. You'll take birth in this world again and again and again. It's up to you where you want to go. If you're attached to this world, you will stay in this world. If you're attached to the spiritual world, you'll go to the spiritual world. How do you become attached to the spiritual world? You have to hear about the spiritual world. The more you hear about the spiritual world, the more you'll become attached. The more you chant the name of Krishna, the more you'll become attached to Krishna. So, this is the process. So we're very fortunate. We know what God does when he gets off the throne. Very fortunate. We know what he does. We know all the details about God. All the details about God are given. So many details are given in Prabhupada's books and the other books of the Goswamis. Like that. So we should read these things. We should become knowledgeable. We should know Krishna like Prabhupada says. You should know, Prabhupada said, you should know my books like the lawyer knows the law books. You should know Prabhupada's books like the Christians know the Bible. Have you ever met the Christians on the street when you're doing book distribution? Christians say, it says in John, right, 8:16, it says this. Right? They know exactly what's going on. You should know the Bhagavad Gita like that. What is Bhagavad Gita, 1866? Yeah, Sava Dhamman. What is Bhagavad Gita 3:15? I don't know what Bhagavad Gita is. We should know what it is. You should know. That's the point. You should know the Gita so well. You should know Prabhupada's book so well. Then you can convince others and you can convince yourself to become Krishna conscious. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we've discussed.
What verse is it?
How does the lust removed by seeing the eyebrows of Krishna? I read somewhere. When you see the eyebrows of Krishna, the lust is removed.
When you see Krishna's eyebrows, your lust is removed.
That is. So how does this? How lust is removed by seeing the eyebrows of Krishna?
Because you're meditating on Krishna's form. You're meditating on Krishna's form. So when you meditate on Krishna, your lust goes away. That's why we do deity worship. By worshipping the deity, your lust disappears from your heart. So the more you meditate on Krishna's form, the more your lust is removed from your consciousness. Is it okay? Okay. Any other questions? Comments? What is three? What's the list?
Prabhupada says regulated activity of prescribing limits in the lotus to directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all pervading transcendence is eternally situated in active sacrifice.
Any other points? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yeah. Yeah.